As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to The Beat podcast from The Athletic. I'm Brendan Quinn, here with the great Nick Baumgartner, here with the great Austin Meek. And gentlemen, the plane has landed.
Never took off, man.
It's finally. Never took off.
Just sat there on the runway.
I felt like you guys were, you know, we've all probably been in a plane, right, where you're just circling a city,
waiting
to land.
Holding
to me, that kind of feels like the last 2 months of your lives.
Exactly.
6 years, one of the two. That's fine. 2 months, 6 years, whatever. But no, 100%.
Jim Harbaugh, extended through 2015, reworked contract. Anyone listening to this probably knows the... Yeah. What did I say?
2015. You're going back in time. They'd probably like to retroactively sign him to 2015.
Yeah, we could get 2015 Jim Harbaugh back here.
They'd probably
go for that.
Probably would have got a raise.
I think a lot of people would sign that deal. So rework deal, rework compensation package. A lot to read into this. A lot of I think this because of this. But hey, one of the beauties of Jim Harbaugh not going to the NFL is that if you sign a deal like this in the NFL, you pretty much immediately have to come out and have a press conference and your general manager talks and you talk and the owner talks. In Michigan's case, they get to just be like, wash their hands of it and be like, oh, there was never an issue. What are you talking about?
See you in nine months.
We can all just sit here and speculate. So that's what we will do for the next hour or three. So you guys have been, you know, digging into this thing for an ungodly amount of time. Let me ask you this to start off. When you finally saw the workings of the deal, right? Okay, this is what it was. This is what these two sides, after all this time, agreed to. Mm-hmm. What were your initial takeaways?
Austin, go ahead. I can follow.
All right. Well, I think that, you know, I think there's two ways to look at it. From a financial perspective, I agree with what Andy Staples wrote on Friday, which is that this is kind of a rarity in college sports, a deal that makes sense, you know, financially on both sides, and a deal that seems to reflect reality in terms of Jim Harbaugh's results at Michigan, because so often we see schools just stumble into giving these huge contracts that, you know, have no connection to winning games, and then they end up on the hook with these buyouts. And so I do give some credit to Michigan and to Jim Harbaugh for negotiating a contract that, you know, looks pretty prudent and pretty sensible. He's still making $4 million a year.
Yeah,
it's not like he's making chump change. But to go from making $8 million a year and basically have your compensation cut in half, like, that's not a small thing, especially, you know, in college sports right now. So financially, I think we have to acknowledge that both sides came together on something that looks pretty sensible. But you know, fans don't get excited about numbers on a spreadsheet. They get excited about wins and losses. And if Michigan is 5-7 next year, I don't think it's going to make anybody feel any better that Jim Harbaugh's working on a reasonable contract. Like, it's ultimately the success of it ultimately is going to come down to whether Jim Harbaugh can get the program back on track. And I think that's very much the question. Nick, what did you think?
Yeah, when we'd heard, it was like October, November, somewhere in there, that, you know, that this was likely going to result in an offer for less money. And then the conversation, you know, when I first heard that, I think I was like, okay, well, that's going to be an interesting conversation when you guys have to sit down with him and tell him we're going to have you take a pay cut. But at the same time, no, I mean, like, when it first happened, it was like, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, logically. I don't know if you'll be able to get him to do it. And this was like, you know, this was in the fall. This was, I don't know if it was November, October, whatever it was, but it was earlier than, you know, last week, obviously. And there was a long way before they were going to have that, you know, conversation to sit down and do it. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, like you said, there was a 2021 piece to that original deal that promised him $8 million, which meant the whole time. And to me, the one of the bigger sticking points in the middle of all this, or the question, I guess I shouldn't say sticking point, but my question was, you know, is Ward going to be able to get Harbaugh to give up $4 million next year to take $4 million less and begin this thing with an obvious, I mean, look at this. This has something to do obviously with COVID and everything else, but this is a performance deal as well. I mean, that's how this was going to be looked. And then you thought back in October, November, well, how's this going to look if you present this to him, you know, at the end of a horrible season, everything else. And after a while, it just became very clear that, you know, Ward Manuel's, you know, only, I guess, concern was we need to figure out a way to get this salary fixed. We need to figure out a way to sit down and get a plan. We need to hash it out. We need to find out if Jim wants to be here. We need to figure out how to do all that. He didn't care about anything else. It was just a matter of we need to get that to the finish line, get him to sign it. And I think once they sat down and talked, you know, everything kind of took care of itself. But I agree with Austin. I think that, you know, what Andy wrote made a lot of sense. I think Ward Manuel and Michigan probably deserve credit for getting it done, although at the same time, like, you know, again, we've said this so many times, like, there's no reason that it ever had to go this far anyway. It was just a situation that got out of control a little bit due to COVID and everything else, and the timing and the windows and everything changed. But ultimately, this deal makes a lot more sense than re-upping him at his original cost or just letting him go on the last year or any other scenario. And also, you know, the only other thing there, I guess, would be, you know, that we can talk about this. Like, would it have made sense to fire him? I mean, like, before we move on here, I guess, Austin, would it have made any sense to fire? Did you land on anything either way on that one? Like, when this whole thing was happening, like, should they fire him? Should they keep him? What should they do here? I don't know. For me, it's a complicated question, but I'm curious on your thoughts on that.
Yeah, the question that I had is, you know, is there a scenario where Michigan ends up regretting this contract?
Right.
And you can look at the financial terms of it and say it's so low risk for Michigan that, you know, ideally it will work out that even if you have to fire Jim Harbaugh next year, you're only on the hook for $4 million. You're not going to regret giving him that contract extension because there's a huge buyout. I think the only way Michigan regrets doing this deal is if things just go downhill next year with Jim Harbaugh, it becomes apparent that they have to make a change. And the program is ends up in a worse place than it is right now.
Right.
And the next coach has a bigger hole to dig out of. And your next coach, whoever that is, if you think Matt Campbell is the guy, if you had a chance this year to go out and get Matt Campbell and you don't have that chance next year and you end up settling for somebody that is not as high on your list, I think that's the only way that Michigan ends up regretting this deal. And I think if you look at it right now, Matt Campbell's probably going to be out there next year. If you have to make a change, it doesn't look like he's going anywhere at Iowa State. So if he's your guy, if you want him, he's probably going to be there next year. If there's somebody else you think is your guy, probably going to be out there. Or maybe Jim Harbaugh gets it turned around. Maybe he wins 10 games next year, and all of a sudden you've got a deal, you know, with a coach that looks like a bargain. So I think it's a pretty low risk deal from Michigan's end. unless things just go off the rails next year. And, you know, hey, this was a bad season. Based on what we saw this year, I mean, I thought you put it well, that the biggest challenge of Jim Harbaugh's career right now to get this back on track. And if it really goes bad next year, I don't think it's going to matter. You know, the financial terms, whatever, you know, you're not going to owe a big buyout, but you still don't want to be in that place where you're, you know, a losing record and you have to make a coaching change a year after doing a contract extension.
So a couple of things here. I feel like even the biggest detractor who would say, you know, Michigan has to move on from Harbaugh, this is a failed experiment, it isn't working and it won't work, even the most ardent believer in that, I think, would have to reasonably say that right now is a like near worst possible scenario for hiring a coach between the COVID situation, between what the market looks like right now. Like, if there were three obvious, like, if you go after that guy, it makes a ton of sense. But like, I don't see that out there. So if you're going to make a hire where you're bringing in a new coach under a restricted scenario, we just saw it with Michigan State, how difficult it is to operate your first year when you're not even able to leave campus.
Right. It's almost, almost a waste.
Like, you have you get no juice behind coming in, right? So in my view, like, if you look out, if you look at this outside of the vacuum of the here and now, and look at a big picture, right? If we're talking in 2035 and they made a move right now, we'd be like, why the fuck did Michigan decide to make that huge move in the middle of that craziest time possible, right? Like, it's win-win where if, look, even if they suck next year and go 6-6 and there's zero development and it's, you know, Ward Manuel decides to pull the trigger, I don't see it being that much dramatically different than doing it now, other than you wasted another year, but whatever, right? So you'd be putting yourself in position to make a better hire. And on the other side of it, if it works, great, right? Okay, now that was the thing that it was always supposed to be. So, you know, I agree with Andy's take that, like, I think it was a pretty shrewd play by Ward and Michigan to kind of wait this thing out, because, you know, my read on it a little bit is that Harbaugh didn't necessarily want to leave, but that he thought that by waiting, you know, Michigan would eventually have to bend and probably give him terms that were more advantageous for him. And they waited it out a little bit. And I think it was, I don't know if it was a miscalculation by Harbaugh, but, you know, in the end, Michigan got what it wanted. It got a lower contract, and it doesn't have to go make a hire right now in a situation where nobody wants to go make a hire right now.
Right. I think you said it. Michigan, from the start of this, was, you know, choosing, I guess not from the start, but from the start of this in terms of this year, when they started having these, you know, like, we got to deal with something with this thing. They were choosing between two flawed scenarios. They were choosing between two less than ideal, I guess you would say. Not ideal to bring back a coach at $8 million who has had serious regression. Maybe not even ideal to bring him back at all, you know, given the trajectory of the program the last couple of years. You could argue that too, and I don't think I could fight that hard with you. But at the same time, like you said, Brandon, it's extremely difficult and not ideal to do a coaching search in a pandemic, to ask that person to then come in here. You'd be introducing this person today. You know, you'd have, you know, okay, man, go out there and recruit virtually. You just lost your whole class, by the way. Now you got to spend the next two or three weeks on Zoom calls with kids probably being like, yeah, I'm good, man. Not answering them. I guess you never know, but this is the scenario that they'd be dealing with. And you don't know if you're going to have spring ball. You don't know if you're going to be able to go on the road and do anything else. I don't even know if you can meet in person with assistant candidates or how often, you know, what all that entails. Yep. So none of it was ideal. But at the same time, it was obviously a situation that had gotten, like, something had to happen here. And I think that Harbaugh, what I would say is this, part of the reason why it went on so long, there's two things. You know, one, the season ending changed a lot of stuff. I think Harbaugh obviously was in a situation where when Michigan came to him originally broaching the idea of, like, you know, this is probably going to happen. I think he'd already surveyed his NFL landscape and found that it wasn't ideal. And when I say it not ideal, I mean he was not going to get a job of his choosing. He was not, you know, even going to be promised to get a job no matter what. And yeah, I mean, I guess he could have. I guess my point is, I don't know if he was actively dragging his feet in hopes that something would come open. Maybe he was dragging his feet just in case. I don't know. But
well, I thought you made the interesting point in your column, Nick, where you mentioned that people around Harbaugh were under the belief that that he would assign basically anything Manuel put in front of him as long as he felt that Michigan was actually committing to him and not just basically picking the lesser of two.
And that was the other piece at play here, which when it was brought up, you know, back in November, like, do you think he'll sign it? And it was like, well, if he thinks you're trying to get one over on him and you're just trying to take away any kind of negotiating rights that he has and saying you have to sign this because you don't have any other options, so just do it. Like, then he's going to drag his feet and he's going to make it difficult. If he thinks that you're genuinely all in on this and that you have a plan and want to work it with him and hope that he's here long term, then yeah, I think he would have signed whatever. I don't know if they ever got to that. And I think that I think they met formally with the contract offer, like the 17th or 18th. It was a Friday in December. And so from there until last Friday, it was like 3 weeks, more or less, once Harbaugh had the contract in his hands. And I think that he went over the money part of it. I think he went over, do I want to do this? I'm sure, while keeping one eye on the NFL as well, though I don't know if it was so dramatic to a point where he was dragging his feet, you know, to a point where he's like, okay, I've called every single NFL team and have gotten a hard no from all of them, so now I'll sign your deal. I don't think it was quite that. But like you said, I think there was a lot of things probably at play there. And then at the end of the day, like Austin said, I mean, it would have to get really bad for them to regret this deal, I guess. But at the same time, it doesn't promise that you're not going to be here in 12 months doing it again.
Yeah, I will.
Austin, you wrote that he was betting on himself, right? That basically this amounts to him betting on himself.
Yeah.
Do you think that because of the terms are so laden in incentives, or do you believe it that just in terms of him actually staying at Michigan and wanting to make it what it was supposed to be?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it is some of both. Yeah. That when you look at the structure of the deal, like, you know, if he wants to make his $8 million, he's got a pathway to do that, but he's got to win the Big Ten. He's got to win the national championship.
Win the whole thing.
And if there's one person out there, you know, that has that level of self-belief that that's possible, it's Jim Harbaugh. I doubt that many other people see that as being possible here, but that's kind of who Jim Harbaugh is. If you give him that challenge that, hey, you know, we're going to give you this incentive laden deal and you can go out there and earn your money. He's the kind of guy who's going to go out there and do it or try to do it. I will say that, you know, the timing of the contract, it makes a little more sense to me having seen the contract, because I think all of us, you know, in the middle of this, we're like, okay, what could they possibly be talking about now? Right. Like, this looks so simple.
Right.
Why are we 40 days now past Michigan's last game of the season and we don't have any resolution on this? And look, I still don't believe that they had to wait until December 20 or whatever it was, December 18th, to actually get together. Like, there was a point after that Penn State game where it was pretty clear that you're probably not going to play again this season, and they could have been having these conversations. But I don't blame Jim Harbaugh for letting this go on a little bit after seeing the deal that he signed. I think that's probably, you know, a prudent thing on his part, is like, yeah, let it play out a little bit. If, you know, if you're going to agree to these terms, agree to this salary, agree to this buyout, to some degree, he would have been doing himself a disservice if he didn't at least, you know, give some space in there that if some NFL team wants to come in there and offer him a job, like, yeah, you're going to listen to that. If you're, you know, if, no matter who you are, if your employer offers you a 50% pay cut, you're probably going to be like, okay, let me assess my options here a little bit before I just sign on the dotted line. So, you know, I understand, I think, a little more why it took as long as it did after seeing the contract, because it's just, you know, it's pretty unusual and almost unprecedented for a coach in Jim Harbaugh's position to agree to a contract like this, which is such a drastic departure from the contract that he had and what he was guaranteed for next year, you know, that $8 million to take a 50% pay cut. Like, I understand why it took him some time ultimately to get to that resolution.
And there's also, I've got to add here, there's an underlying nuance to this that, while not the driving factor necessarily or something that whatever, but This is Jim Harbaugh, who came here under a situation where it was like, hey, man, here you go. You got the job. Here it is. Do anything you want, and we will be here to support you with bells on, right? The first several years, he did anything he wanted. There were no, the word no was never used. I mean, signing of the stars, trips overseas, IMG in Florida, on and on and on. Weight room rebuilt, Schimbeckler renovated, everything. Everything he asked for, you know, he got. This was the guy who could get anything he wanted from these guys. And suddenly, you now find yourself in a situation where you're Ward Manuel in the athletic department, kind of like trying to remind him, we're your boss. It's not the other way around. So you're sort of shifting that. And I don't want to say that this was like a power struggle, because that's not really what this was, I don't believe. But there was an underlying part of this, piece of this, that Jim Harbaugh was hired here by Jim Hackett, who recruited him, you know, hard for that month of December and that final year, you know, made him feel like $1 billion, everything else, you know. They grew close. They got along really well. When Jim Hackett left after, what was it, a year and a half, Brandon, you remember Harbaugh wanted him to stay. He wanted him to remain. It wasn't anything that he had against Ward, but he was very close with Jim Hackett and that operation that they had. And then Ward comes in and, you know, he was a freshman on Harbaugh's senior team at Michigan. Obviously, you know, they know each other. They respect each other, but they're not close. They weren't close. They weren't best friends. They weren't operating under that situation or scenario. And then this comes along and it's suddenly like, all right, Ward, like this is, you know, you've hired Juwan Howard, you've hired a hockey coach, but this is the big one. This is why you're here, to monitor this football program. And now you have to be the person who reminds Jim Harbaugh that, yes, you do have a boss. It is me. And we are going to have a conversation about your contract, and it's going to end with you signing something with less money or you leaving. That's the situation. And that is not probably the easiest of conversations to have, even though it is your job. But I'm just saying there was a dynamic there that was different than I think most scenarios in this situation. This is a very unique situation. It's not normal. I don't think that we can is there anything else we can compare this to? I don't know. But like I thought that part of it, the Ward-Harbaugh dynamic, it's interesting and unique, and Schlissel's part in there too. It's just Michigan is not normal. It's not a normal school, and it doesn't have a normal football coach.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I mean, in Ward's statement, he said, you know, the quote was there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was a pre-written thing that they could have said whatever they wanted. And the line is there. Our program didn't achieve at a level that anyone expected this year, but I know those setbacks will drive the coaches, players moving
forward. You got to say that. Yeah, that's
like,
Ward.
This was not a, like, we're all in on Harbaugh. There is acknowledgement that this thing isn't going the way anyone
Right. And that was important.
Could possibly think is reasonable.
We talked about,
let alone acceptable.
We talked about that in October, November, whatever. Like, Ward, and he did it. And that's the thing where I would give Ward credit is that, and I will give him credit because I know how this worked. And I know that Michigan at large put this on Ward's shoulders and said, Ward, dude, get us out of, you know, one way or the other, you need to, this is your job. You need to do it. You're the one driving the ship. You let us know when it's done. Right. That, I mean, I don't think it was quite that cut and dry, but I think it was pretty close. And so you credit him for getting through the whole thing, but also ultimately, yeah, man, he had to evaluate a situation that up until like this year, I'm not sure it was evaluated. It was Jim Harbaugh's here and we're lucky to have him. And that's how we're going to operate as a football program. That is no longer the reality. This is not business as usual. And I think it was very important for Ward Manuel to, I don't know how this is going to work, but to establish that, to put that, like you said, to get that in writing and saying that this was not acceptable on our standards. Our standards are not insane, but this wasn't good enough, and he needs to be better, and he works for us, and we're in charge of this football program and the university. I think that was important to note somewhere in here in this whole, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So it was reported that these conversations started last year, after last season, that Ward Manuel and Jim Harbaugh were talking about a contract extension, and then that got tabled. When the pandemic happened, I'm really curious. I don't know about you guys. I'm curious what this contract would have looked like if there had been no pandemic and if they had agreed to an extension last year. And I wonder if Ward Manuel is looking at this now, you know, and maybe feeling like, man, we kind of dodged a bullet here because we didn't know how the 2020 season was going to go. I mean, nobody predicted anything that was going to happen this year. But if they had done that deal a year ago, I wonder how different it would have looked. And in a way, this season, I mean, as strange as this season was, it did, you know, it gave Ward Manuel a chance to, you know, to evaluate some things that I think that we all had been concerned about. And you could see, you know, Michigan, they went 9-4 in 2019, lost to Alabama in the Citrus Bowl. Not a bad year, but you could kind of see some of the cracks forming. And there was a sense that the 2020 season could, you know, it could maybe go a couple different ways. And then COVID happens, everything happens, just a disaster of a year. At least, you know, Ward Manuel's, you know, stronger negotiating position coming out of 2020 than he was in 2019. Because after this season, he could say, like, you know, Jim, some of the stuff that, you know, we've kind of been worried about, but it was possible to overlook it when you were winning 9 games a year. We can't overlook it now. Like, we gotta be honest about where this thing is. And it probably gave Ward Manuel some leverage to do a deal that they would not have been able to do if they were having these conversations a year ago.
100%. He would have, I mean, it wouldn't even have been, I mean, if they would have gone to him last September, October, and said, we want you to take a pay cut, he'd have been like, get the hell out of here. They wouldn't have done it. I mean, I think he would have gotten more of that money or maybe close to it again if they even got it done January, February. You know what I mean? Before March. But no, I mean, like, then it changed. I mean, circumstances were what they were, and then they weren't. And I think, yeah, ultimately, you credit Michigan for getting out of it in a manageable scenario. But I think the other important piece here is, like, I think that what frustrated a lot of people was this. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn. But when I heard from fans a lot, it was like, are they ever going to ask Jim to be better? Are they ever going to look at him and be like, hey, this isn't good, man. This isn't what we hired you for. We hired you to be Urban. You're not him. Like, are they ever going to tell him, we don't think this is good enough. We think you should be better, like, at bare minimum. Because, Brandon, you were here since day one. I cannot think of one moment until this fall that anyone at Michigan, directly or indirectly, went to Jim Harbaugh and said, this ain't it. This isn't enough there, big guy. We need more from you for $8 million a year, and this is what finally
happened. This is the problem this is the problem when the head coach is the highest paid, most important,
has all power,
biggest personality, the iconic figure, right? There is no boss. Who the hell would even say something like that to
him? He's got a boss now.
Right. Someone from the board is going to go over and be like, Jim, hey,
this
listen,
isn't enough.
This ain't cutting
it. He'd be
like, oh, yeah, really? Well, you know, I'm going to go campaign against you in the next election. Let's see how that goes. All right? So what I'm interested in with Harbaugh is, like, first of all, when was the last time he spoke? It was that little brief thing right at the end of the season where he was just like, we'll take care of whatever deal whenever we take care of whatever deal.
Yeah, the week of the Iowa game that ended up getting canceled. He did his Monday. But, you know, he could still, like, say, oh, I'm in game mode. Like, we're in the season. I'm not going to talk about any of that. So we have not talked to him since officially the season ended.
As part of, like, this accountability that you're talking about there, Nick, like, I feel like at this point, this with this contract coming out, like, it is owed to Michigan fans who have put up with this product for a long time to not just put in a statement, quote, we have a plan, which is what Harbaugh said in his statement, but to come out, actually speak, actually make yourself available, you know, have a proper press conference, do something, because we all know what's about to happen, right? They release this contract and no one's going to say a goddamn
That's
word
correct.
Until whenever, right? They're going to make a bunch of coaching changes. No one's going to say anything, right? It'll be painted as a plan in action as opposed to a plan in speaking. But, like, at what point does a Jim Harbaugh or a Ward Manuel have to come out and actually speak to the million constituents that pour money into this program, and be like, no, we don't just have a plan. This is the plan. This is what we're going to do. This is what we expect of ourselves. But no one actually says that.
I mean,
like, Michigan just gets to get away with being Michigan. And the fact that it's able to go on is both impressive of the brand, but also bullshit in reality.
I mean, I wouldn't, what I would suggest to you is if you're going to hold your breath on that, would be to buy an oxygen tank.
Oh, I'm not. I'm breathing well.
I don't think that's going to happen. because the answer to that would have been in like December, like early December, that should have been something that was discussed. You know, the season's over. That was a disaster. Here's how we plan to repair it. Here's what we want to just, you know, or at least, like you said, I mean, like if you finally get a new deal done or whatever, but no, I mean, that's not going to happen. We've been down this road a few times in certain situations with Harbaugh before where it's obvious they need to make a change at, you know, in a coaching situation somewhere. And he'll say, we're bringing everybody back. And then a week later he's made a change. I mean, it's just, he's not going to do it ever. They'll never be able to make him, you know, be a public facing coach that speaks to us with any kind of, you know, I don't know what the word there would be, but like whether it's a productive session or not, that's not going to happen. He is not someone that's going to go out there and sell you tickets by pumping up a crowd or anything like that. That's not going to happen. The only way, I mean, honestly, the only way that this works and the only way it's going to get fixed, and that's why in some ways it, with Harbaugh, this always gets a little refreshing. It's like it's either going to happen on the field or it's not. There isn't going to be any, you know, they, and maybe they try to shape some narratives after the fact or whatever. But like, if he wants to get out there and start shaping narratives in year seven about certain, no, man, like you should have done that in year one or two. That's over with. So now you got to go win. In that case, I don't think anybody wants to hear it. I mean, I think my counter to you would be that. I don't know if
I would like to hear this plan.
I don't know if
I would like to hear
this plan. Yeah, I'm sure. But like, I don't know if fans are interested in hearing his, you know, ultimate conversation that would devolve into reasons why it hasn't worked rather than reasons why, you know, what's stopping you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if people are interested in it.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a plan and I guess we'll have to see what your plan is. But, you know, I don't know if fans are interested in hearing it from him one way or the other. Maybe they are. I don't know.
Yeah. I think, Austin? You know, Michigan has got to be careful. You know, Michigan cannot take for granted that fans are just going to support whatever they put out there. And, you know, maybe there was a situation back in 2015 where the attitude could be, look, you know, to the fan base, we gave you guys every single thing you want.
Everything,
so you all just be quiet and let this man work. Don't question him. Let him do his thing. And, you know, we did our part. We got you the coach you wanted, you know, the best guy on paper we could possibly have in this job. And so we don't owe you guys anything. We're just going to let him do his thing. We're obviously not at that point anymore. And I think, you know, I think part of if Michigan fans felt any satisfaction at all in seeing that contract extension, I think it was the satisfaction of knowing like, okay, our administration is not like totally detached from reality. Like they understand what is happening on the field. Like if Michigan had given Jim Harbaugh $7 million a year, fans would have, you know, they would have been in the streets. Like they would have been saying, what are you guys watching and why is it so different from what we're seeing? So, you know, I think that contract at least communicates to fans like, you know, Ward Manuel gets it. Like he's not happy with what happened. But Brendan, I mean, to your point, I kind of agree with that, you know, I think fans, like, no, there's nothing that Jim Harbaugh can say right now that would make fans be like, oh, okay, we're convinced. Like, okay, you know, we trust you to do this. But there is more that he could do. And as somebody who was on those Zoom calls all year and, you know, and listened to Jim Harbaugh, you know, do his Monday press conferences and stuff, it did get kind of tedious and exhausting, you know, to just trying to get him to like acknowledge reality.
Right.
And a little bit of that, I think, could go a long way. And it's not, you know, it's like I said, it's not going to change everybody's opinions of Jim Harbaugh. But just a little bit of like opening up and, you know, letting people into the process a little bit, you know, it might make it feel
well, for a guy who
better.
Preaches accountability to speak in terms of accountability, right?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to live in the world that exists outside
of
your
own.
For
those at home, Nick
brain.
Is now waving his arms.
You've got to live in reality. You can't ignore reality. And I think that's what happens sometimes here. You know, that's what happens a lot of times. It's like, where he'll come back. Well, I don't know what the big deal was. I had this plan in my head the whole time, and this is exactly how. Well, you didn't tell anybody anything. You don't talk to anybody. So, like, no one knows, and people speculate. And that's how it often goes. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's too late for any of that. I think he's got to win games. I think it's too late for him to go out and massage any goodwill with people. He's got to go win. I think that's why this is sort of interesting.
I mean, I don't think it's a matter of massaging goodwill. I think it's a matter of accountability.
Oh, fair enough. But, you know, ultimately, his accountability will be judged on, you know, whether or not he pulled us out of the fire. And I think that that's, and again, we talked, Austin and I talked about this a little bit last Friday, I think. Like, people have already started asking, like, what's that look like? You know, like, what would happen if they're, like, 8-4 or something again? And you're like, well, I got to tell you, then someone's going to have to make a really difficult decision on whether or not that's good enough. Or, you know, if there's something that you think is coming on the other side, or if this is topped out. Because, I mean, we're getting close to calling it a spade here. You know, I mean, at some point here, I assume.
And they're going into a season with a favorable schedule, home games, Washington, Ohio State, MSU, Northwestern, Rutgers, Northern Illinois, Western Michigan, right? So you get
the eight.
Your biggest two rivals at home. Your primary non-conference game is at home. And then away, you have Wisconsin, Indiana, Penn State, Nebraska, Maryland, right? Not easy at all, right? Indiana's cooking. Wisconsin. Penn State's probably going to be back on the uptick.
Yeah.
Who knows about Nebraska, Maryland? But, you know, in terms of what the Big Ten can be,
sure,
you have to consider that an advantageous schedule if you are Michigan, right? So, you know, if you roll out there and go 6-6, and five, and there's a $4 million buyout sitting there, which is pretty much nothing. Right. I don't know. I don't know.
I would think that, like Austin said, if he wins 10 games or something, that would be your sign that, like, maybe things are...
He'd look like a genius.
You would have to do something that makes last year look like an aberration. And you would have to do something that makes it look like you have made massive strides from when 2019 ended. And I think that from where I'm sitting as we're talking today, you know, that to me means that you're going into the last game of the season against Ohio State with a trip to Indy on the line. That's what that means to me. And I don't know if it's like you do this or else you're fired or whatever. I don't know if that's just not the real world. But, you know, I mean, average or below average or more of the same to me would be like, and what are you doing? Why'd you even go through all the struggle to get all that put into place, the low buyout, everything else, you know, the difficult conversations, if you're not going to act on it? And I would think that, because I'll say this again, it was never Ward's, you know, like, preference to fire Jim. I don't think it was ever even in his... he hasn't said this, but, you know, based on conversations with people who he's spoke with, that was never a consideration of his. He wanted to work with Jim. That was not a consensus, I don't think, in the, you know, whatever, of Michigan power brokers. There were some people that thought, I think maybe it's time to move on. I don't think it was enough, but I think some people were like, I think his guy's had all the opportunities he needs and it's not working. So, yeah, I mean, if they're bad or average or whatever, then I think it'd be easier to just call it what it is and go forward. It might even be for Jim too. I mean, it might be something where he says, you know what, it's not working, let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any attitude that, like, okay, we're Michigan, like, you know, we had a rough year in 2020, but we're still Michigan, we'll be fine. Like, just look at that division. You know, Ohio State, yeah, they're going to lose some guys, but they're going to replace them with five-star top 100 players. Ohio State's going to be fine. Indiana, best year in their history they just had. They've got their quarterback coming back.
Right.
They're going to be good. Penn State, bad start. 1-4 in a row at the end. They've been good under James Franklin. You think they'll be okay. Michigan State, you can say whatever. You know, Michigan you know, should win that game next year, but didn't happen this year. And Maryland and Rutgers, Michigan finished behind Maryland and Rutgers.
They almost lost to Rutgers.
Both of those programs are on the way up, and Michigan's on the way down. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, well, of course, like, Michigan's going to finish in the top half of the division next year. I don't know.
Maybe and are not. Any of those programs overhauling their coaching staffs? You know, most of those places, I imagine, well, probably have a little bit more continuity, even with Michigan keeping Harbaugh.
This happens here every 2 years. They overhaul stuff all the time here. This isn't... Like, that was another thing that sort of scratches your head, where it's like, well, this is a restart. No, he's already restarted this thing, like, three different times. So this is, like, the fourth. And it's like, I think that no one was ready to throw in the towel for a lot of reasons. And it comes back to neither Michigan was in the middle of two situations that weren't ideal, and I think they picked the one that was the most manageable, probably in the moment, and we'll see if it pays off. I don't know. But, I mean, whatever the plan is, yeah, I mean, maybe it's best to keep it under wraps, because if you come out and say more of the same and that's your plan, nobody's going to want to hear that either. So, you know, I guess we'll see how that goes.
And I believe, so I mentioned the staff turnover, right? So if I have it right, Austin, I think I read in your piece, six assistant coaching contracts are expiring today.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and some of those guys may be back. You know, they may get new deals. Mm-hmm. Like Ed Warner, I think he's one of them who's on an expiring contract. You know, and he very well could be back. But yeah, I think the expectation is that it's going to be a pretty much a complete turnover on the coaching staff. And that's where, you know, I mean, you brought up the point of like, if you have this great plan, like at some point you got to kind of clue everybody in on what it is. Like if that plan is, we're going to hire Derek Mason as our defensive coordinator, we're going to get Joe Moorhead to come in and be the co-offense coordinator with Josh Gattis. Like, you know, those things that have kind of been, you know, rumored and talked about, like if that stuff comes to fruition, then, you know, at least I think your fan base is like, okay, like they're serious. You know, they're really, you know, they're doing something bold here to try to, you know, to try to turn this thing around. But the flip side of that is if you end up with something that feels, you know, maybe a little underwhelming based on some of
patchwork.
Some of the expectations that formed in that long period of time where there was nothing definitive, you know, like the word now is that they've got their eye on the linebackers coach with the Ravens to come in and be the defensive coordinator. Could be a good hire. Don't really know anything about him. Young guy, didn't play college football, has never been a play caller. I don't think has ever recruited at the college level. Who knows? Could be fine, but that's not the kind of thing that
it's a recommendation from his brother. Like, look, this guy could be a genius, and I'm not acting like I know anything about this.
It's more of the same, but like, isn't it?
Just the look of it, I'm like, are you kidding me? What? Like, when there are potentially proven dudes out there who've done it, I'm like, that
seems crazy
to me.
It's impossible to offer someone who says that proof to tell them that that's like you're looking in the wrong spot, because it looks exactly like the same hire that we've seen.
Same thing.
I mean,
and like,
and again,
I do wonder if this is where Ward can carry a little weight for the first time be like, no,
well,
that's not going to be your hire.
It's too late now on something, because, well, that's the other part of this, is they allowed this thing to go on as long as it did, and you need to make decisions.
Sure.
And Austin said it. I mean, Mike McDonald's with the Ravens, they just won a playoff game, so it's like, well, he'll join the team whenever the playoffs are over. Okay, well, there's still, like, possibly a few more weeks of that. You know, certainly this, you know, another week here, and it's like,
can this guy recruit?
Well, I think he was a student assistant at Georgia who had done a little recruiting in a spot like 6 years ago, you know, as a young person who potentially possibly could. But no, I mean, no, he doesn't have. He's been with the Ravens since 2014 or 13, one of the two. So no. And the answer on that one was, again, long term. And I don't think everyone on the staff is going to be gone. I think they will keep some, obviously. But the staff needs to be better from a recruiting standpoint. So if you were hiring a guy like this to run your defense, then you need to surround him with better position coach hires in terms of recruiting. You need to find guys who can recruit to help him, and vice versa, you know, offensive side too. I mean, that's a big piece of this, and we'll see. I mean, that's a big we'll see, is what are you going to do with your recruiting staff? What are you going to do with your strength staff? Are those two up to snuff? Are they up to par? Because God, I mean, we just said it. They almost lost to Rutgers. They were 2-4. They were a complete disaster. You tell me what world exists where they shouldn't be looking at literally every single person who has a key card to that building and being like, what is it that you do here? And is it good enough? That, I mean, exhaustive or not, that's the process that has to be happening, I would think. And if anything short of that is happening, then this is all just paper pushing for the sake of paper pushing. I mean, that's the deal.
Yeah, Brendan, you know, to your point earlier, you know, turnover, staff turnover in college football, like, it does happen. Like, you know, Penn State, like, they hired Kirk Shiroka to run their offense. A year later, he's out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not just a Michigan thing that happens. Like, you know, even successful programs do have staff turnover, but it does feel like Michigan has even been, you know, at another level. And it's just this cycle of, like, a guy comes in, everybody's really excited about him. You know, maybe they're, you know, year one, you know, you're talking about, oh, you know, we can build on this, we can build on that. Year two, it's like, you know, that wasn't what we hoped for. Year three, it's like, hey, mm-hmm. who's the next guy we're going to go out there and bring in to the staff to change things up? And like, at some point, if you're changing everything else but the guy at the top, you have to be like, okay, any of these other moves, are they going to accomplish what we want? Or do we have to just at some point accept that it's not, there's not going to be a magic solution with the coaching staff that's going to turn right. Michigan from a, you know, average team into a really good team?
Right. The logo and just saying that you're Michigan can't be the culture. Like, and I know that's an overused word, but there needs to be some level of continuity of culture within any successful program. I mean, that's just in any sport. It's this that has to exist.
Well, kids, when
and
I
it's
have
impossible.
To, yeah. The kid,
it's impossible when it's just bodies coming in waves in the offices.
Right. That they've never met before or have no. Right. Yeah. And it's, yeah, I agree.
So.
What's a big sign?
What else? Anything?
Well, I think that ultimately it's like, you know, what a lot of fans, I think when you get down to it was, like we said earlier, you know, are they going to be accountable for the issues? Are you going to hold anyone accountable for this? Are you going to do anything that signals to your supporters that you don't think this is okay? And I think that that's something that gets asked to Harbaugh an awful lot. Like, are you going to do something about all this? What is that going to look like? Are you going to... You know, if you've already done it with Don Brown, so, you know, if that's going to be all his fault, I guess that's another argument that you could make on another day if this all goes back to his feet. But like, that's the ultimate thing. Are you going to hold anybody responsible for this? Or are you just going to allow people to just keep going based on things they've done in the past? The Jim Harbaugh coached in the Super Bowl before. Yeah, cool. It was 8 years ago. This is also college, by the way. It's not the NFC East. So it's a little different, right? And I think that he needs to figure out once and for all, if he can connect and motivate and relate to players of a certain age, at this level, if he can't, then he needs to move on and do it and with his coaching career. That's Jim Harbaugh. I mean, that to me is where this is at. Are you organized enough with 18 to 22 year olds? Can you connect with them well enough? Can you relate to them on their level to teach them properly and install confidence into them, instill whatever, into them to a point where they can hang on and not just drop the rope in the middle of the game because, like, well, this is hopeless. Because that is what we saw on the field last year, and that is really alarming. And so, to me, it's a culture thing right at the stop. He's got to start a new one just like he did when he came in here the first time. It's the difference is now is you're cleaning up your own mess, which I don't know how often that works.
Yeah, the way I'd say it is Michigan gave him they gave him a lifeboat. You know,
yeah.
If he wanted to get off that contract that he signed, he would have been justified to say, well, I can tell I'm not wanted here. Yeah. I'm going to go find another job. Even if it's not a head coaching job in the NFL, he could have gotten another job.
Yes.
And looking at that contract, he might have been justified to say that. So he made the decision, I'm going to come back here and I'm either going to get this thing turned around or I'm going to go down with the ship. One right. of the two. And we're going to find out.
Yeah. I mean, and so... In terms of what's next here, guys, like there's obviously going to be turnover, but in staff, I mean. But in terms of the spring, like what, fill me in here. What is the talk? Like what are you hearing in terms of spring ball? What is this actually going to look like moving forward here in terms of the circumstances that we're under? Like what is Michigan going to be looking like in terms of navigating what's next?
Yeah, I mean, are they going to have a normal
spring? Ooh, those are two confused faces.
I'm trying to say the best way to put it. I mean, it depends on COVID, I think.
Yeah.
Like right, a lot of it depends right. on COVID. I think that, you know, based on what we saw in the fall, I would assume they should be able to have some sort of a spring session. You know, if it's just working with yourself, which would be massive for everyone.
Other student athletes will be on campus.
Yeah. Well. I mean, you know, it depends on COVID, I think. You know, if COVID numbers, you know, by the time March or April come around are manageable and you can get through that and you can have a reasonable, you know, 15 practices to get yourself ready, you'll have a coaching staff by then. Everything will be in place. Although we've seen with Harbaugh before, sometimes that's like a couple weeks before spring. That's another thing. Get your staff ready more than 6 days before spring practice starts. Probably would help. Uh-huh. probably would help. You know, stuff like that. So that would be a goal if you're looking at things that they can do. Get that thing taken care of before you're in a reasonable position to start a spring ball. But I would think that spring practice would be predicated on, you know, if COVID makes it allowable, then you should be able to do that, which would be a huge deal for them. And otherwise, I think there's probably some roster stuff to look at, too, in terms of transfers and things like that.
You got to figure out who your quarterback is.
Yep.
Is Joe Milton back? Are you going to give it another try with Joe Milton? Are you going to say Cade McNamara won the job at the end of the year, so he goes in number one? Are you going to say wide open McNamara, Milton, J.J. McCarthy, five-star freshman coming in, everybody have at it? I don't know. I mean, the quarterback thing is a big question for me because I mean, there's absolutely no favorite to me as I look at it in that job. It's just totally wide open.
All over the place.
I mean, this does... Yeah. What's interesting is that this was a, you know, extending Harbaugh and kind of doubling down on the plan to an extent. I know they didn't like throw a shit ton of money at it, but you're still kind of doubling down on the plan. In some ways, it's kind of a move indicating stability. But at the same time, it's like there's right now, from where I'm standing, there's a decent chance that going into week one next year, it is a who's going to start this game.
That's right.
And by the way, it's a first-year defensive coordinator who we have no idea what the hell he's going to do. And it's just going to be like deja vu all over again. And how does anything different actually play?
You got to go win.
I don't know.
Go win some games. I mean, that's it. That's what the whole thing comes down to now. It's the same as it was when Hoke went into his last year. And it was people were like, well, you know, he was in a different scenario. The level of time people were going to wait on him to get it turned around is shorter than what it would be for someone like Harbaugh, who has a resume that would, you know, like it's just a better coaching resume. But now that's where it's at. Like if week two was Washington at home, right? Mm-hmm. If you get run off the field in week two at home against Washington, we have our answer. We don't need to see anymore. There will be no more like, well, that was a fluke. Or, well, if that hadn't happened, that how many times have we heard these narratives for Harbaugh for 5.5, 6 years? Yes. Well, it was so-and-so's fault. Well, it was O'Korn's fault. Well, if that guy hadn't done that. Well, if that, oh my God, there's like 1,000 of them now. Like a couple years ago, maybe one or two, you could held water. But now, man. All of that.
Meanwhile,
is gone.
Ohio State takes its JV team up to Michigan State and beats a team that beat you on your home field.
That's it. There's no more stuff. So in some ways, for a lot of people, all that clutter about if only Harbaugh could, no. You either can do it or you can't. You can get this turned around or you can't. We will know in 12 months or we won't. You know what I mean? Like that's where I'm sitting at it right now. I guess the only murkiness would be as if you're 9-3, 10-2, and somehow people don't think that was good enough. That would be another conversation. But I don't know if you're 10-2, after what people just went through, I think that they'd be a little happier and maybe a little more encouraged at where this thing's going, because that would be a lot. That would be a very impressive. That'd be coach of the year level stuff, right? Yeah. You got them to that point.
Oh, then I'll get more than $4 million.
You probably would.
You can get some of those incentives.
get that bonus money. There you go.
I'm going to say this now, and you guys hold me to it, because this happens every year. It's like, I sit here after the season in January and February, and I look at this team like, I don't know. And then, you get to preseason, and you start to be, you start to hear like, oh, this guy's looking really good. I mean, we did this with Joe Milton, we know this story. And, like, we all got kind of pulled. I got pulled into it a little bit. Like, boy, Joe Milton looks really good in practice. And you get to the beginning of the season, you like convince yourself that they're going to surprise some people. Like, we can't do that this year. Like, we just can't. Like, I can't do that. Like,
people will.
It's going to be totally like
you show it to me on the field.
Show it to me on the field, and we're not going to do this hype thing again. We just can't.
More now than ever, because I think that last year proved that they were working at a lower level. Because the Milton thing aside, I mean, the talent depth across the roster was alarming last year. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I mean, that's there will be no, it's you either do it or you don't, man. Like that, we'll see it. Right. We'll see it. You'll know it. Football's not a, I mean, it only is that way if you allow it to be. It's a pretty clear game if you look at it objectively.
I just remember, like, this season will be the perfect example, right? They go, they beat Minnesota. We recorded a podcast that week going into the Michigan State game that if you go back and listen to it, sounds insane. Yeah. It sounds like an alternate universe. And I remember watching, like, even the first quarter of that Michigan State game where Michigan scored a touchdown and Gus Johnson's like, this is Bo Schembechler, Michigan. Like, Michigan is back, right? It's like five quarters of football and it's all coming into place and Michigan's Michigan and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you're right. Like, get to November of next year without the tires falling off and the wagon falling off the cliffside, like, before, you know, anointing anything or anyone.
Go earn something. Like, how you know, like, that's what his first team's situation was that he got here. You know, they were 5-7 coming off a terrible year, first coach. Talent wasn't any different. Same talent. They had a small recruiting class that wasn't very good that came in that year. They didn't bring in anybody new. It was the same team. And they went out and turned it around. They had good players. Maybe there's some dormant ones laying here. We'll see. But, you know, that's it. That team had to go earn it. They turned it around. No one thought they'd be able to do that. And they did. So either this team can or can't. And that'll be – I mean, I know that sounds whatever, but, like, there is no more. It's been 7 years. There's no more of this – well, he needs more time, or he needs this, or he needs that. Like, you've had an opportunity to do literally everything you wanted possibly here, and so if you have it, if you don't have something in place, then that's on you, and there's nowhere else to reach. I mean, the only other thing I guess would be, what else could you claim here at this point? Like, we wait till we get NIL. I mean, like, how many more times do we have to wait until you get something before you can prove that you can be, you know, what you're being paid to be?
Yeah. Any parting thoughts from you, Austin? Are you enjoying the Michigan beat, by the way?
Yes.
I tried to tell you.
A qualified yes.
I tried to tell you.
You know, like, next year when we get through this COVID thing, I think it'll feel a little more like actually covering a real college football beat because, I mean, you know this, Brendan, too, from doing basketball. Like, it doesn't feel like we're actually doing the job that we do right now. And that's, you know, it's hard, but it's life and a lot of people have it worse. So I'm not going to complain about it, but I'm not going to complain when things get back to normal either.
Yeah, we did just cover a 6-game season.
I added it up. 6 games in 611 days. Like, all of this stuff that we do, podcasts and breakdown, it's for six football games.
Six.
kind of depressing when you think about it that way.
Right. Horrible games. What a year.
Well, the good news for Michigan is that basketball team isn't too bad. So make sure you're following along on The Athletic for all the latest on Michigan basketball.
Has Dylan bought a yacht yet with all the football's bad, basketball's good subs yet? I mean, this is the wheelhouse time for Dylan here.
Yeah. And we're fairly used to it.
I was going to say this is the old hope tradition, right? Whenever football would dip. Yeah. Beeline would take
Nick,
off.
The animosity in that tweet that you sent the other day, I thought was a little uncalled
Which
for.
Which one?
You're like, oh, God forbid you don't follow or cover a shitty team or whatever you tweeted at me.
I didn't say it that. I said it's about time you got to cover about a good time. Team. Which, you know, it is about time, Brendan. I was getting worried about you. You haven't covered a, you know, undefeated, top-ranked Final Four contender in, like, all of, a year. So, as the rest of us here in Detroit just languish with all these teams that we're covering. Poor Max and Cody and James, for crying out loud. James has to introduce himself to every new Piston on the team probably every 30 seconds. That roster's changed so much.
But it's doing a hell of a
job. Yeah, it's all great. Yeah, James has been great. You too, Brendan, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, pal. All right. Well, we'll leave it on that. But hey, while you're at it, make sure you check out the whole Athletic Detroit team. They're doing awesome stuff, right? Hockey's going. So
starting
Max
back
Boltman,
up. Yep. I think camp.
The young stud himself, just a beast. Mm-hmm. I feel like people think assume that Max is like our age, but Max is like 20 something still. It's ridiculous.
And we joke, but the Pistons are back going again, and they have a ton of crazy stuff happening. And James is all over all of it, so.
They are interesting. They are certainly interesting. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Make sure you are following along at The Athletic. Make sure you are subscribed to The Athletic. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast. Leave us a review if you'd be so kind. And now more than ever, be sure to tip your bartenders and servers.
Happy farewell to the county, the place where I